Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
This is a Pesach topic. So here's my question. I'm going to put each of us on the spot. Who, or for whom, is your Seder? Who is the audience at your Seder? And I'll tell you why I'm asking. I think it's because too often we have many different audiences sitting at our Seder, and we make the mistake of trying to please them all. And if we sit and try to please them all, like many businesses, organizations, right? If we try to please everyone, we end up pleasing no one. And so the question I would ask is, again, who is the audience at your Seder, and what is the best way to address them? So Akiva, when you think back, and the audience at different Seders in your life might change, I imagine you've probably had more than one person lead your Seder, and so the person leading the Seder may change the audience, or the focus of the audience, but share with us some of the audiences that you've had at the Sedarim that you have been at.
Avi, if your question is at other Sedarim, who is the audience? I'm not always sure that I know. I don't think it was me. However, I also don't know that that's not true, or that that's true either. I don't know. I think that I know the correct answer to the question, but I don't even know if that's what I do at my own Seder. I think sometimes we try to. So just to, you know, address the elephant in the room, right? The correct answer is that the Seder is for our children.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay, well,
I think that sometimes the Seder should be for our children, if that's who you want your audience to be. If you have a significant number of children sitting at your table, then yes, you may decide, as if you are the Seder leader, to lead the Seder with them as the focus. But if you are a young adult leading a Seder for other young adults, then you probably should not gear it towards children, because there are none there. Or maybe they're too young to appreciate it.
There are always children there, obviously. Sometimes their parents just aren't there, or their own children.
Fair enough. But I think that the challenge is, right, that because Seder is often a family event, you have heterogeneous groups in terms of age, in terms of knowledge, in terms of, sometimes it can be in terms of background, and that can make it challenging. The more homogeneous the group, the easier it would be to have Seder, because then you clearly know who your audience is.
But wait, Avi, I'm actually going to, I'm going to run with this one for a moment. That being that it's always geared towards the children, and with even the understanding that, yes, sometimes the only children that are there are people who are children of people and do not have children themselves, and their parents are not there. And why am I saying that? Because it kind of still fits. It's still geared towards the people who are at the Seder. And the whole concept of why we do the Seder in the first place, right, is to see how long we can go without eating. No, it's not that. It's to retell our story, to live our story, to experience Yetziat Mitzrayim, and to really get as much as possible an understanding and a handle of our story. And I think with that in mind, it actually does satisfy even your statement of how do we handle either a heterogeneous group or a homogeneous group, and gives us the opportunity in general to gear, ideally, our siddurim towards the people who are there, such that we have a future, we have a continuation, because Yetziat Mitzrayim is really a major aspect of what made us us, and really is kind of pivotal point, right? That's why we make such a big deal of it. And so I think in that regard, it is very important that we do always acknowledge that it's always geared towards the children, just the children might be different people.
So on the one hand, Akiva, I will agree, right, that Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatza Mimitzrayim, that the whole point of the day, or the evening, is for us to feel as if we ourselves left Mitzrayim. However, you are being hyper-intellectual, because I think that you're trying to fit everything into the category of everybody is a child, and therefore we can ask questions like we would for a child. But that's not my point. I understand everybody is somebody's child, and we're supposed to feel that way, but I would suggest that the developmental level that I'm suggesting we speak to, or I'm asking where we should speak to, differs greatly. Whether you're talking to somebody who is 8 or 10 versus somebody who is 18 versus somebody who is 25 versus somebody who is 50. And so the idea of looking around our Seder table and saying, to whom am I addressing, if not the entire Seder, then at least the following section of the Seder, is important. And perhaps even stating that, right? The next section of the Seder is really going to be for our children at the table who are 8 to 10 years old. The next section of the Seder is really going to be for our older adults because they have so much to share with us. The next section of the Seder is going to be for whomever it is that you want to focus in on. And I think it has the potential to make the Seder more meaningful, because what it allows us to do is to say, I'm going to gear either the whole Seder, or at least components of the Seder, to a very specific audience, and help them hone in on this idea of, what does freedom mean to me? What does leaving Egypt mean to me? And how can I make this personal and meaningful for that individual person? So with that being said, I thought, Akiva, that maybe we would take a few components from the Seder and talk about how we might address them to different age groups. So perhaps we'll start with younger children. I'm going to suggest that anything under 5 to 7 years old, It's not worth addressing. It's worth having a conversation with them about Seder, about Pesach, about what it means. There are rote pieces that you can prepare them for, but I'm not sure that intellectual conversation is real and meaningful at under 5 to 7 years old, and you're going to have to look at your particular population to see if that's true. However, from about 7, maybe even a little bit younger, to 11, approximately, I'm going to suggest that there are some very specific things that you can do. So Akiva, if you would, I'm going to ask you to describe a little bit about the developmental stage that exists there between 7 and approximately 11.
Okay, so Avi, the... in ages 6 to 7 through 10 to 12, we can expect that children can tie their own shoelaces by 6 to 7 and do simple math. And I'm kind of being obnoxious, but not really, because the other thing is that from 6 to 7, we can start to understand the concept of numbers, know the difference between daytime and nighttime. And I do think that some of this does legitimately play a role in some of our Seder explanations, because we have people talking about at least a little bit what the difference is between day and night, and all the days, including the nights, versus not all the... And I think that you're rolling your eyes. And the funny thing is...
I was going to say, for our listeners, I'm rolling my eyes.
Yes, and the reason why I think it's hysterical that you're rolling your eyes is because this is exactly what a 6 to 7-year-old would do during the Seder, because most of the adults also do it during the Seder when we have the conversations like, what's day? Sorry, that's just frozen Coca-Cola exploding in the background. What's the difference between day and night? All the days and all the nights, and how to count, right? These are the things that in some ways are only fun when you're an adult and you're into it and you're learning about it and you're actually having an enjoyable time, because this is not the part that of the Seder that I think is geared towards children, because really the part of children where they begin to understand certain things, like they can tell a story, they can hear a story, they can relate certain events, and they also know if they're getting things compared to their peers. And so in these realms is when some of the story of the Seder fits, right? Why is this different from all other nights? What are we doing here that's unique? What makes this so special that we're doing it in such a special way? That is something I think that the children can get. The Dayenu, right? We hear all the time. We tell our children all the time, it's enough already. This is a concept to really kind of hone in on that idea and in some ways be a little more grateful, I think, because the reality is that as we go through Dayenu, it's a good reminder that we have been given a lot. And I think in and of itself, I would just point out that that's a nice opportunity to be able to think about everything that we're given and perhaps that we take for granted. And that's also something that I think that children can begin to understand.
So I'm all for the idea of gratitude and sharing that with them, but...
No, they don't understand gratitude. They just understand I got this versus I didn't.
I disagree. I think that children at that age can begin to understand the concept of gratitude.
Which age?
7 to 11.
That's a big chunk, Avi.
Yeah, it's a big chunk. They can begin to understand it early, right, when it's concrete, and then they can begin to appreciate it a little bit more as they get a little bit older into the less concrete stage. But I think there are some other pieces that we can focus in on from the Seder as well. I think there can be some pattern recognition when you talk about the different fours that continually repeat and how they're connected. So the idea that we have four cups of wine, the idea that there are four languages of leaving Egypt, and that those are connected. I think the idea that we can look at the concept, again, it's a little bit abstract, but the idea of freedom and being able to choose to do what you want within reason is another sort of abstract concept that children at that age can begin to experience. So then let's talk about the preteen years a little bit. When we get to those, you know, preteens, they're a little more snarky, they're a little bit more know-it-all. And when we get to the Seder, if we're trying to focus in on them, right, it may be an opportunity to give them an option where they get to be the expert, right? Giving them an opportunity to lead by doing some of the reading, by asking them to share their expertise on things like the four sons and how do they imagine them visually? Or what would the four sons say today? Is a way to allow them to be experts within their own realm and to contribute. What else might you suggest for preteens, Akiva? Preteens to early teens.
It probably depends more on where their knowledge background is at that age, because there and where the interest lies. Because while in the earlier years, I think that everybody's relatively on the same page as far as what they can grasp versus what they can't grasp, I do think that as they start to differentiate a little bit, because some of this, I'm thinking maybe certainly in the later teen years, they might be in the position to start having some of those understandings of the more critical thinking. Why are we asking these kinds of questions? Why were they having these kinds of conversations? Or, you know, even if it's, you know, they're in a yeshiva and they're learning, and I don't mean like a yeshiva like after high school yeshiva, I mean, you know, a high school yeshiva even, or, well, yeah, because they would be in high school around some of those times. They might already say, oh, I remember learning this at school, or I remember reading a little bit that something sounded similar to this, and they might even get excited about that, because even though teenagers don't ever want to admit they get excited, they do sometimes, I think, get excited when they feel like they know something, and certainly when they have an opportunity to show off. And so I think that there's, to that aim, a little bit of that. And even maybe you have somebody who doesn't have a lot of background but still has that kind of mindset of appreciating and being interested in the critical thinking and those kinds of questions. Again, we see a little bit more of an interest. And on the other hand, that might be a great opportunity to think about the four sons, right? Because you're going to have some who are going to be rebellious at that age and completely not want to participate or not be interested. I think you'll also see a little bit more of a differentiation of a child who might feel compelled to participate and participate in either reading in Hebrew or reading in English or reading and coming up with their own translation of the Hebrew, again, depending on where they're at, versus a child who might just speed through it and have little interest and feel like they don't have to be on display for anyone at that age. So I do think that there's more differentiation in that realm where it's probably all the more crucial to really know your audience and know who you're talking to, because that's probably some of the age where you want to get them excited and you want to get them into it, because you do run the risk, I think, more so of losing them for at least a number of years until they become more human again. And more willing to be excited about things and such.
So the next group is our 20-somethings, and I think for them, perhaps the best advice I can give is think back to those deep philosophical conversations you might have had at 2 a.m. with a friend or a roommate or people as you drank some good wine. So drink your 3 or 4 cups of wine and have those deep philosophical discussions about what does freedom really mean? And why would we have needed to be in slavery in order to understand freedom? Perhaps conversations about what does freedom mean today? What does slavery mean today? Do we have an obligation to help those who are in either physical or emotional slavery to free themselves and to help free them? And I think that those are philosophical conversations that are worthwhile. If you go back to the idea of the beginning and making people ask questions, having people come with their deep philosophical questions about Judaism and about Shmot, did this really happen? Is it important whether or not it actually happened? Those are all questions that we can ask our 20-somethings and engage them in some deep critical thinking and creative thought. Anything to add on that, Akiva? Okay. In which case, we will move on to our 30-somethings, probably our 30-40-somethings. They can probably be grouped together. And at this point, most people are going through a change in their life where they are taking on greater responsibility and a greater role. And they may be imagining themselves as parents, as leaders in their community. They may be able to relate to certain figures in the Haggadah differently than they have in the past. It may be less about frogs jumping on someone's head and more about what was it like to be Moshe at this point, to come in and have to essentially take a stand against the most powerful ruler in the known world at that time. How had he prepared? How had God prepared him? And what are the parallels that we can find for ourselves in today's world?
Boy, Avi, I guess that pot is just as black as the kettle, huh? Because who's being hyper-intellectual now? I think this is a great topic, but I'm actually going to challenge you something completely different, because I think while on the one hand, yes, we definitely want to gear our Seder towards where people's different developmental levels are, the fact is that one of the pieces that is, I think, completely missed about this age group and subsequent age groups are, this is the time where we meld families. And you have one set of participants' families who has one set of minhagim, and then you have a different set who have another set of minhagim. Or you have a transition from one patriarchal or matriarchal, although I don't know if I've ever been to a Seder that was matriarchally led, but that could be my own experiences. Suffice it to say, oftentimes this is the age group where you have a transition from one to another because of that very switch of, well, now this one's parents are coming and this one's parents are coming and maybe these siblings are coming and these and everybody's coming from a different background and this one wants things done their way and this one wants things done their way. So this, I think, is really a big piece of the Seder development at this developmental stage in life, and possibly later on again, because then we have the transition as we age to the next generation, which again leads us full circle back to the generation after generation comment. Suffice it to say, I think that the important thing to think about in this time is if you are at that stage of starting to do Sedarim by you as the leader instead of parents or other friends, or maybe you were going to a community Seder for a while and now you're not anymore, what have you. There's a lot of things to figure out with this, because you're going to have someone who says, well, we always did this. We always had this for Karpas. We always had this for Karpas. We do the Afikom in this way. We do the Afikom in this way. And I think this is really a major turning point where, you know, oftentimes I think families start to develop what are their own minhagim. What are they going to do? How are they going to balance things? And how are they going to teach their children how to have shalom bayit amongst a time where, let's face it, the stress of getting ready for Pesach, be it from the cleaning aspect, the cooking aspect, the koshering aspect, or simply the purchase of groceries aspect, and who's sleeping where and how are we fitting everybody into this place, or how are we traveling, is already enough to really be a great test to someone's relationship and someone's home life. And so this, I think, is really the pivotal opportunity to develop how do we have shalom bayit and how do we develop our own set of methods to determine how to have happiness in the home and cohesiveness and do so under sometimes some challenging conditions that are the opportunities. Also, maybe, just maybe, if you're newly taking over leadership of the Seder. Maybe you have the previous leader wanting to please that former leader, makes them proud, make them show that you know what you're doing, or show them that you know how to gear it towards the right audience. So I think that's a lot of what happens at this stage, and perhaps less, at least in depending on where you are in that moment, of coming up with the really great questions, which I agree is very important and wonderful, but at the same time, we do have those couple of siddurim in the middle where you're at that change moment and you need to learn, how do I balance all of this for the sake of myself, my sanity, my family, my family's sanity? Thoughts, Avi?
Yes. Yes, I think the Shalom Bayit piece is important. Yes, I think that the idea of the family being together and each one experiencing the entirety of the Seder, at least as much as possible, is important. It's going to be a strange thing to say for both a rabbi and particularly about Seder. I generally reject that the traditions, other than those that are specifically in the Haggadah, have to be followed. So just because your family has always done X or Y at the Seder doesn't mean you have to do it the exact same way, or in some cases even do it at all. And I think that making those transitions from one leader to the next leader definitely need to be handled with a gentle hand and a encouraging conversation. But I would also encourage you to say, if you're going to make that change, I might do things a little bit differently, and I hope that will be okay with you. Because I have to find my own style, my own way of doing it, and allow that to happen. And you may split, right? One of the brachot and klalot, one of the blessings and curses of having two siddurim outside of Israel, is that you can have the old guard lead one and the young whippersnapper lead the other. And in that case, you can get some of each on different nights. You could even split who leads the first half of the Seder and who leads the second half of the Seder and flip-flop the next night. But I think that being able to address the audience, whether you have run a Seder 100 times or this is going to be your very first time, I think that looking at who your audience is and providing something for each of them, so that it's not a race to the bottom of the common denominator, right? What is it that, as long as we get through all of this, then everybody gets to have their chicken soup? As long as that's not the goal, and there's something meaningful for people to at least try to dig their teeth into and build from, then I think people will have a meaningful Seder. Thoughts?
I think that that's a lovely combination of ideologies from Mr. Banks from Mary Poppins, who handles his subjects, wife, children, with a firm but gentle hand, and the Brady Bunch, where everything is all nice and happy and dandy. And I think that the reality probably ends there, because I think that it is very difficult to switch from one guard to another, as you put it. And I do think that that probably is very challenging at any level, whether you come from a background of very little to go with, and probably even more difficult, but I'll leave that to the rabbi to respond, if there's one or two rebbeim in the house. I do think that those are challenging pieces that are important to discuss, and I think that all the more so addressing it in a comfortable way, in a meaningful way, is really a wonderful opportunity to master that cohesiveness and have an enjoyable Seder where you can then focus on and make sure that the focus on how can we have this be enjoyable, how can we make tomorrow night, if you're in the diaspora, even better than the first night, and have that opportunity to even, again, take advantage of the fact that there's two Sedarim if you're in the diaspora, and be able to say, you know what, tonight we're going to gear it towards the one age group, and maybe tomorrow we're going to gear it towards the older age group. And I use that differentiation because I think that way you get, you know, the younger ones on board when they're still willing to hear it and think that it might be exciting because it's the first night. And then the second night, when they know what's coming and they know how long it's going to be, then maybe you've given the opportunity for those older members at your Seder to have a little bit more intellectual digging, have a little bit more curiosity, and you've also given them perhaps a little bit of time to maybe think of some questions and answers. I think it's, either way, it's a wonderful opportunity, and I have to say that I do look forward to the Pesach Seder and to figuring out how to have that wonderful, enjoyable balance of how do we have everybody have a nice, meaningful Seder and learn something and make it as interesting as possible. And I do think it's very, very achievable, so long as I think what you're biggest message here, Avi, and I agree entirely, is Seder's not always supposed to be the same every year. There can be variations and differences, and there can be enjoyable shifts, and maybe sometimes flops. I'm just going to point out from the mathematics standpoint that 100 Sedarim means that you're at minimum 50 if you started leading Sedarim when you were, you know, born.
That assumes you only lead 2 Sedarim a year. Some of us have led more than that.
Well, some of us don't have multiple practice Sedarim at school.
True.
I guess that brings us to our question for around your
Seder table.
I was going to go with Shabbos Pesach because I think that there's probably a lot of questions around the Seder table. But maybe this is one for that. If you have time to listen while you're cooking. What is it that you want to make sure you include in your Seder, and which audience members are you gearing that towards? This is Interesting Questions, Rabbi Dr. Avi Green and Dr. Akiva Daum, wishing you a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Thank you for listening.
If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.